Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
four weddings and an Elvis, a sort of a review. Now, one of the things opening up about podcasting like this is that you can give a several segment podcast. So this is before I've actually gone to it. I'll give a review just after I've been, and then one a little bit further on and try and stitch it all together. This is one of the, I suppose, advantages of podcasting. It doesn't seem all that sophisticated, but being able to actually shift and time shift different podcasts around the place. So, to be quite frank, I don't have very high expectations of it. So this is, I think, some sort of form of musical play. And I've recently been to see the Queen one. What's it called? Bohemian Rhapsody? No, We Will Rock You, I think it was called. Yeah, We Will Rock You, Ben Elton. So this is a very matured, was it, musical? So very, sort of, it's willowed by the time it gets to sort of local productions. All the poorer ones have disappeared. It's a well-known success formula, and it's sort of like success formula upon success formula, so they know what they're working with and know that it will be successful, be able to afford to put in a fair amount of money into the actual cost of the production and the time, coordinate it, get it through. So it's very formulaic, or the, at least the We Will Rock You is very formulaic, the standard premise of a mad regime and two people fighting against it and finding love, and that's just be, I'd say that would pick up about 50% of plots, from Footloose to this one, to Romeo and Juliet, all this sort of social fracas versus individuality. Now, this seems more fragmented in terms of an idea. So you've got the segment, and then this, it was very much sort of a nostalgia music turn the handle thing. This is We Will Rock You. This, of course, is seems like a myopic, cringe worthy of Australians actually living up American culture. So from what I've read, it's a four different versions of Elvis go to get married at a place. Sounds incredibly boring. Now, what's happened is that I have to keep a certain amount of social stuff going, expand my rehab in terms of reading and focus. And as I improve in certain areas, it sort of improves, but then it sort of exposes other things. So as I learn to podcast, I've got to learn to, obviously I've learned to speak and be on topic for a while, which is great, but it means that I've got to listen and convert that into a conversation and a whole heap of other skills. So it's, I've developed one skill of a multi-level thing. So I've also got to listen to more music and go through things like this. I'm trying to give a generalised analysis of what's going on. Now, the world has changed that in order to go to a local production, I have to go online and print a ticket, which is pretty amazing stuff. And of course, my family, being rather sensible, have said, no, that's stupid. But being a focused person, I'm going there nonetheless. So we'll see how this goes. And my overall aim is to give a series of reviews and get my thinking going straight on it. So I'll try and give a review after the show, which is in the Little Glenbrook Cinema. So there's probably 150 seat, probably 200 seat maximum cinema. It's an old style cinema with a space for the piano on the side. And truly an old style cinema. Cinemas used to be repurposing of music halls, so it's basically a cinema built on a music hall theme. The person who's been there for 50 years, has been at the School of Art for close to 100 years, so that's pretty old. So even in the 40s, Glenbrook was mostly dirt roads. Yeah, there's a few seal roads, so it's sort of come a long way, but it's a bit of a historic place. It's historic place to go back into. It's got this in Australia, anything 50 years is historic, and it's a big struggle. Glenbrook is or has had heaps of historic houses, little hospitals. There used to be a little tea room, a huge tree. Obviously, that hasn't survived once the huge tree went. But there's these pictures of this little horse and buggy land and a staircase which twirls around in a little tea room up the place. There's also a historic on the RWF base. So just up, so Glenbrook overlooks. It's almost so you're in the sky. You overlook over the Sydney base, and there's the RAAF base, the Royal Australian Air Force. So we sort of like the, if you put the letter R in front of it, something, the Royal Australian Regiment, RAR, RAN, Royal Australian Navy, all these types of things. So the main headquarters is up there. Nothing much happens. It's rather amazing that to cut costs, they've outsourced the security for the Air Force security to a private company. So you rock up there. They're quite good, and I suppose they get value for money. So this sort of gives you a sense of the scale of the Australian Army and Force. We'd be lucky to have 30 planes, operational planes. Most of them go off on operations, do things with the United States. We'd have a aircraft carrier once in the, well, towards the 70s, but now we've just got a slab of concrete. So that's up there. But on that base is a hamburger, a 30s hamburger restaurant. So those Art Deco things, white and blue, sort of a Greek style, for when this was the Blue Mountains was a sort of a gateway for holidays, and also because it was close but isolated and the temperature right for various TB and recovering hospitals. So you go up here, it's pretty amazing. You go up and then go in across the bush and you come across a ghost hospital. They want to knock it down and develop it and stuff like that, but they're not allowed to do it. So you've got these ghost things, there's grave sites about the place. So with that being said, I'll finish this up and get into the watch of the show. Well, I've just come and seen the show, and it turned out to be remarkably good. And yes, there's going to be spoiler alerts. I'm sure you're not going to see Four Weddings and an Elvis. In fact, there's actually probably two Elvises in it all in all. Now, where it was good, so that's the major thing, is that it was broken up into four acts, a wedding each act. And the first three acts really didn't actually do very much. It sort of had a bit of a theme for the act, and essentially established two characters or two or three characters each time. And where it all came together was the surprise fourth act, in which the actors or the weddings of the first three acts came together and interacted in a way that was well established. And so if you didn't see it happening, and I've I've probably ruined it for anybody else who's going to see it. It was very surprising. So you had obviously a small theatre and a dragged out things where there was sort of fairly banal archetypal introduction of characters, very sort of, I suppose, wooden, not wooden, it's more archetypal, sort of extreme comic characters in the first three acts. So it's the coming together in the fourth act. So that's a true, I suppose, surprise, shock comedy. And I suppose that's the basic thing of the art of, I suppose, modern, unlike Shakespeare, but in the modern storytelling, is that there's this education, you get educated, and there's this delight when the education comes off. So sometimes there's direct delight, or sometimes there's side delight, or there's basically a language which is established, and there's sort of an intimacy with it. So in terms of the analogy of education in Toy Story, you had in the first Toy Story 1, you had the boy using a microscope to burn Woody, and so you got taught how that worked, and then that was later on used towards the end of the film to unlock a problem. And so there's that use of education, and then if the audience has paid attention, this is unlocked. It's a very precise device. Or I think in or it had Tom Hanks, not Survivor, could have been I've forgotten what it is, not Marooned, it was something similar to that. You had Wilson, the volleyball with hair growing on top of it, a very intimate story, something quirky that everyone becomes iconic for him. So let's summarise this by the time we get home. So there's the three build-up and the final act. The first build-up act was a revenge-style act, and that is the two people were coming to revenge, having a revenge wedding. So they were been cheated on by the different people, and they were able to televise their wedding back into across the United States from Vegas to the intended people, and the television and mobile phone footage. It's interesting that you had the internet playing in such a way that you could televise it, that could actors off stage could actually speak, or characters off stage could speak by telephone. So that was the interesting use of that. And so this particular two people had this sort of rather plastic, not plastic, but sort of shallow idea of doing revenge to their jilting. They were going to get married quickly in Las Vegas to, having been dropped themselves, prevent or to one-up the people, the couples, respective, the husband of the wife and the wife of the husband, if that makes sense, of the wife and husband getting married, of the foursome to get married ahead of them. And at the end, this is released when the actual angry woman, who is confesses that she's not marrying for anger, she's marrying for love, the man is unsuitable for her because he's still angry, but then he then falls back into love with the estranged wife. And comes across. But the major thing of this is that the we get introduced to Elvis as a celebrant. So that gives the Elvis, and there's a bit of a release there because it's four weddings and Elvis. He wanted Elvis really quickly. So that's Act 1. So Act 1 is a vengeance. Now I just have to see. Oh, Act 2 is comeback. And so there's these two stars who are just marrying for I suppose, as advice, a show to get some PR. They're flagging careers, and this lets you introduce the. The advice of this is to, I suppose, establish character, stuff like that. But the actual key thing is the applicant, the celebrant, there eventually becomes the husband, prospective husband in the fourth act. And it's there, and it's very much about these stars and the actual creating a bit of dimensionality. That is sort of, it's hard to say, it is actually quite clever because it actually pushes the stars so awful, it actually creates a sympathy between the audience and the actual actors, because they're sort of equally offended. Now the fourth act is a description of the third act, is true love, and this is where Marvel marries Fiona convict, and there's a the convict Fist is there, and they have this interaction where Marvin is over the top, sort of artistic, straight down the line, again adding a dimensionality of correct interpretation. Giving you a sort of a dimensionality between the audience interpretation and a very strict interpretation of all things. He's a male delivery person, knows all the male laws. So when I said male, this is postal male. And takes up another dimension, again, in the view of the United States. So this is rich, wealthy, mainstream Vegas was able to actually demonstrate different aspects of the United States quite well and play them together. And so there's a series there that fits to resolve. You've got this comic thing. Oh my God, that's a... Oh, I've never seen a possum just run past. I'm running home into this. So we've got three acts. First act is vengeance, second act is celebrity or fake. The last one is, the third one is true love. And the straight guy gets to be able to convert the cons to various things. The con is called Zip It Bitch, and there's a story about the actual male person being interested in zip code, so he misinterprets her internet name as being interested in male. So there's all this sort of naivety that come across. So you've got all these elements coming together, so it's quite well crafted. Then finally, in the fourth scene, so there's four acts. The first act again is vengeance. Second act is celebrity. Third act is a true love. This all comes together, and these all combine to create these three elements. Are then brought up together and re-melted as all these people get back invited into Sandy's wedding. Sandy, who's the proprietor of the Vegas wedding shop. Then you have this tension as the bride comes, the groom comes in. The groom happens to be the Elvis from the second act, and he is there, and he's also a foil to who doesn't actually see, but doesn't get the entire attention of celebrity. So he says things about the celebrity as being, oh, these people have failed. And he keeps on saying the wrong thing or not getting the dependence on celebrity. I'll just finish up Finish up as they get here. So we've got the dependents on celebrity. They do get married, and the friend who is the Elvis from their first act is the Elvis, and they have a marriage, and the actual marriage is sung a little bit with the Elvis songs, and it was really good in terms of the very first act. It was the first Elvis, and after that, having someone dressed as Elvis, then the voice and reference to Elvis will be carried over. So again, there was a bit of sensitivity of not overusing the Elvis gag. So overall, it was a very good thing. Now, one of the things being there as a community thing, it was sort of surprisingly good. But besides all of that, you could actually get in and actually have a few reasonably deep conversations with people. I can't go into all the conversations there, but one of the things was the actual research portfolio they had for it. They had that out there while you're having a little cup of tea poured for you for a dollar donation. And the interesting thing with that was looking through it, there was a lot of study and thought, and the actual props were designed and photographed from actual Vegas things. The Elvis was studied, the accents were studied, the geography of the United States was studied. It's, if you get the study document, it was like a reading an intelligence document constructed. It was actually, you know, page after page of people, consultation and specifications, and everything was done sort of like a military operation. And then the directors, each one director directed scene one and three, and the other two and four, and they workshopped it in such a way that it allowed the development and then cross-fertilization, then harmonization. So it was a very sophisticated operation at the end of the day in the creation of it. And I suppose this is what you get, that what happens is that these companies know what they can achieve, and they're not a dumb group. They actually go through and surprisingly filter these things out, and also have a measure of understanding how things should go. Look, yeah, there was certain aspects to it. I think that's enough for now. So, yet again, another very surprising local theatre production. Not very much, not too flash, but very good and well produced. Thanks for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.